Welcome to the ROTC Scholarship Podcast, hosted by former Army ROTC Professor of Military Science, Lieutenant Colonel Retired Rob Kirkland. In these episodes, we explore how to best prepare yourself to obtain one of these valuable scholarships for those applicants who wish to attend a college or university and become officers in the military. The application process can be complex and confusing. This podcast works to make it more understandable. And now, the ROTC Scholarship Podcast. Welcome to ROTC Scholarship Podcast. This is Lieutenant Colonel Rob Kirkland. And today we're going to talk about the ROTC interview. Now, with me today is Colonel Lee Reynolds. He served as a detachment commander for the University of Southern California Army ROTC program from 2011 to 2013. He was an Army public affairs officer for over 20 years and commanded the Armed Forces Network Iraq AFNI in Baghdad, Iraq from May 2009 to March 2010, and as a director of media operations and assistant spokesman for the military commissions at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. He was commissioned from ROTC at Hofstra University and has a master's of leadership from the University of Southern California. Hey, Lee, great to have you here today.
Well, thanks, Rob. Appreciate it. I'm excited about doing this and sharing my knowledge with your listeners.
Yeah, no, that's great, Lee. I mean, Lee and I go back a long time. We served as lieutenants back in the late 90s. We were both field artillery officers, and late in our career, we both were in ROTC, and we experienced a great deal there with candidates who were looking to do the interview. And since we both retired, we've been both conducting interview preparation and learning really a lot over the past 3 or 4 years about really what makes a good interview and how somebody can be successful in their ROTC interview. So how important is the interview? Before I start bombarding Lee with questions here, it's very important. I mean, you see that, for example, for the Air Force ROTC, about 50% of the scholarship determination is based upon how well you do the interview at the Air Force ROTC program. The Army, it's probably around 30 to 40% that's conducted at the Army ROTC detachment, and the Navy is about the same. So doing well on the interview is crucial to getting a scholarship. And for somebody who has, say, average SAT scores compared to other candidates or average GPA, having a great interview can really put you a leg up. And likewise, if you have great scores, and you can actually probably decrease your chances of getting a scholarship by not having prepared for the interview. So the interview is probably the most important part of the ROTC scholarship determination. And so again, it's very, very important that you do well on that interview. And so the purpose of today's talk with Lee Reynolds, and of course, I'll be chiming in because him and I both work these interview processes, is to kind of give you our best advice to you on how to succeed in this interview and coming out with the best chance of getting a scholarship, because you just did the best you possibly could do on the interview, and the rest is left to the ROTC folks to make a decision on you. So with that out of the way, and you know, kind of hopefully I've convinced you that the scholarship interview is the most important part of the ROTC scholarship application process, I'm going to just go ahead and bombard Lee Reynolds with questions regarding...
Well, Rob, if I could just interject on the same thoughts there, is not only is the interview important for ROTC, but I mean, for any job, the sit-down interview is critically important for all the reasons that you've stated. And as you know, my background, I have conducted interviews not just for ROTC, but I've done them as an Army public affairs officer for the media. I've had to prep Army senior leaders and leaders at all levels, whether they're military or civilian, working for the military for interviews, and also in corporate America, where I worked, I was responsible for hiring people. And I've been on plenty of job interviews myself, so I'm very familiar with both sides of it. But, you know, I've had to interview people for jobs in corporate America, for ROTC scholarships, and just general interviews in general. So I can tell you that the interviews, that's your handshake with the company or with the military in regards to these ROTC interviews. It's critically important. And I just don't want people to miss out the point. I think you drove that point home, but I just want to reemphasize it. Preparing for these interviews, you can't over-prepare.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that, yeah, certainly the more people you can rehearse with, the more different kind of looks you can get. And in particular, as we're probably going to talk about numerous times in this podcast today, is having people who prep you who know something about the service that you're applying to and can help you with those and understand kind of the question set that the interviewers are going to ask you. And the question set is a common question set amongst all of the services. Now, there is, differences between them a little bit, but in general, the question set is going to be about the same. And I like to follow up with you, Lee, about, what's the general theme or question sets that we're really looking at for these scholarship interviews?
Yeah. So, what people have to remember or understand is that this is a job interview to become an officer in the military, whether it's Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marines. So initially, these questions are designed to do a couple of things. The questions are going to ask you about your leadership background, your leadership experience, about what type of athletics you've been involved in, and about your academics, your scholastic experience. But as they're asking these questions, they're looking at your answers, but they're looking at you also as a person. How well is this person answering the question? How are their communication skills, their oral communication skills, and their verbal and nonverbal skills? All this is critically important. But I think the key things that they're looking for here is not just trying to find out about your leadership or athletic or academic background, but it's for you to showcase yourself. You're being given an opportunity to really highlight why you should be one of the few people, when you consider the tens of thousands of people that are applying for these very competitive scholarships, why you should be one of the ones who actually get that. So they want to hear you speak. They may ask you about leadership and athletics and academics, but it's how you answer those questions, how intelligently you answer those. They're going to look at your confidence. They're going to look at the overall person. And then they're going to throw some extra questions at you that maybe you prepared for, maybe you didn't. But if you're well prepared going in, they want to see how you answer that. What's your demeanor like? And do you come across as somebody that can handle challenges or not? I want to say also is probably one of the first questions that they will ask you. And one of the questions that I find people, whether it's students or people in corporate America, struggle with the most is, okay, John Jones, welcome. Tell me about yourself. And it's a question that gets asked quite frequently, but it's one that is usually least prepared for. People struggle to answer that. But my advice is always, focus on the job. What is this interview about? There's a lot of things you could probably say about yourself, but focus on the key things that your interviewer needs to hear. You don't go into your whole history. You just address, okay, this is who I am. I'm Tom Jones. I'm a senior at Newfield High School in New York. I love athletics. I'm a good scholar. I love a good challenge, which is why I want to join the military. And it's simple, it's short, it's sweet, but it's something that the individual has to tailor to themselves. And quite often, I would say, talk to somebody that knows you and is not afraid to ask you questions and pull this out of you. Because oftentimes, people who are new to this, which is usually the students who are applying for these scholarships, they don't have the savvy. And I don't mean that as an insult. It's just they don't have the experience, really, to understand who my audience is, what type of information I should say, and put that in, you know, short 2 to 3 sentences, and then we can move on.
Right. Yeah, that's good. I mean, they're going to certainly ask you those questions right away, about yourself, and the ability to be able to answer those questions are important. You know, I know you always talk to me about talking points, which is an interesting way of looking at things, and ones that you taught me to kind of how to frame these interviews, because, you know, I think, as you mentioned, Lee, there's, you know, you're not 100% sure what they're going to ask you. But if you have these kind of talking points about the key, say, 5 or 6 things you want to get across to the interviewer, that can be, I think you would agree, that would be very important in case, in no matter what they ask or what they ask on this interview.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. You want to, even though you're the interviewee, you want to help control the conversation. So let's look at those 3 areas, the leadership, or the SAL as we call it, right? Scholastics, athletics, and leadership. And let's say you're someone, you've done a good self-evaluation, and I'm strong in athletics, I'm strong in leadership, but you know what? My academics aren't as strong as they could be. One question I know I should anticipate is, well, you know, your academics are a little weak here. You want to be able to prepare a talking point that's going to cover that. It's when I work with people who are in that situation, I'm able to talk to them at length, find out why is that weak? What else have they been doing? What are they doing to improve that? And you form your talking point about that by taking a weakness and showing them that, yes, I have, you know, struggled in this area, but this is what I'm doing to overcome that now. And oh, by the way, my strengths in these other 2 areas, and you kind of like bridge to that. But then for each of those areas, scholarship, athletics, and leadership, you have 1 or 2 talking points that highlight those key strengths. And like I said, again, if it's a weakness, then you have a talking point that addresses how you are working through that and why that is not going to prevent you from being a good college student and eventually a great officer.
Right. It's kind of anticipation and then having things kind of in your kit bag to talk about, in the interview. One of the things that I've found, I think, in interviewing with, you know, in the ones that I've done, and the ones that, you know, you and I, when we prep our candidates, is really a knowledge of the service that they're going to be going to. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've interviewed people, candidates, where I ask them simple questions like, you know, what branch are you interested in the Army? And they think the branch is on a tree and they're not sure what that means, a specialty. Or, you know, what do you know about Army ROTC, or what do you know about Air Force ROTC? And they have never bothered to go to the website to look at what ROTC is all about, or looking at what specialty they're interested in. That would be similar to, let's just say, and you mentioned earlier about the interview for a job, that would be similar to interviewing for a job at Microsoft and not having looked at anything about what Microsoft does before you interview. And so one of the key things is I think that students can, at least candidates that I've seen, generally can talk about the things that they're doing right now with a lot of confidence. You know, they know what they're doing in high school. They know that what they're involved, and they have those kind of things down, I think, a little better. But then when you start getting into any questions involving the service, unless you've been prepared well, you're going to stumble.
That's right. And it's all about preparation. You know, even if you've had a parent or a grandparent who have served in the military, I find that a lot of them just know, oh yeah, my grandfather was in the Air Force. And I say, oh great, you know, so what did he do? I think he worked with ammunition or bombs or something. I'm like, okay, so what do you want to do? Well, I don't know, I just want to be in the Air Force. So it's like, okay, you've got to do your homework. You know, the Air Force or the Army or all service branches have so many different jobs and fields that you could go into. So as you said, Rob, you know, if they haven't done it before, I start working with these students in preparing them before a second session, I give them homework. Go to these websites. Read about, you know, if they want to go in the Army, go to goarmy.com, go to the ROTC sites, read about the different branches, the different opportunities, and answer this question for me. If it's, let's say they want to go into the Air Force, tell me in your own words, why do you want to be in the Air Force? And a lot of people struggle with that. So that's part of their homework, is find out more about the Air Force and answer for me in your own words, you know, dig deep personally and don't be afraid, because a lot of people feel, especially today, that, you know, they have a sense of patriotism and service to country, but they're afraid to say that. And I tell them, don't, you know, that's, I mean, in my interview, I myself was an Army ROTC scholarship recipient, and that's what drove me to the military. Service to country and patriotism. You know, there's no doubt in my mind I was going to serve. And I said, it's true. Say it. But, it, you know, I have to pull it out of them and make them comfortable and feel that, you know, this, that it's the right thing to say. But yes, do your homework. Find out why. And then, and I think, Rob, and I know we've talked about this before, is, and I think we've helped out some of these interviewees. If it's the Air Force you're interested in, go to an Air Force base, whether it's active duty or reserves or an Army base, if you want to go to the Army or whatever branch it is, get out there, meet some officers, meet these ROTC instructors and talk to them. Really find out more about the branch of service that you want to go in. And also, if you're going ROTC, find out more about ROTC so that, you know, by my second prep with these students, you know, I tell them, you've got to demonstrate to me that you can, one, you can do this research, but if you can't prove to me why you want to be in the service and what job that you want, then you're not going to be able to convince the person that's interviewing you, and you're not going to get the scholarship. So do your homework.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that both you and I have done with candidates is to actually arrange for a visit to a Army National Guard unit. I always encourage any candidate to visit the Air Force, Navy ROTC, or Army ROTC beforehand and ask questions. If you can actually, you know, you can actually go to the unit that you are going to interview at and go there ahead of time and get to meet everybody before you go in front of your interview. So, you know, if you can tell the interviewer that, you know, when he or she asks you, why do you want to be a Air Force officer? Why do you want to be a Navy officer? You could say, well, I visited the Army National Guard in my local area, the Armory. And I talked to Lieutenant Jones. I talked to Captain Smith. And this is what they told me about the Army. Or if they ask the question about ROTC, is that I visited Navy ROTC and spoke to Lieutenant Jones. Lieutenant Jones told me about these things about Navy ROTC. Imagine how much more powerful that is to your interviewer when you've actually done the physical legwork in order to be able to tell the interviewer about what you've done to learn more about ROTC and the military. So getting back to Lee, to the talking points, let's just say that, you know, you've done all this legwork with ROTC, you've done all this legwork with, you know, visiting the National Guard and Reserve unit, you know, you spent, you know, say 4 hours or so, and you've learned a lot, but yet the interviewer doesn't seem to be asking you questions about that. But that could be something that could be fantastic to bring out in the interview. So how do the talking points help a situation where you've prepped one way, you've done a whole bunch of things to demonstrate your knowledge of the military, but yet the interviewer seems to be going in a different direction? How do you use this idea of talking points to kind of make sure you get that information to your interviewer?
Yeah. You create a bridge to the talking point that you want to use. So let's say they ask you a question about leadership. Well, answer that question. And then, you know, you've answered the question. Oh, I held, you know, I was vice president of my senior class in high school. And these are the two or three examples of some of the great things that I did as vice president that I'm proud of. And that made me so interested in leadership that I arranged to go and meet with this Army reserve unit. And I went and met with them. I spent a full drill day with them, and I did these things. They let me roam around with the platoon leader so I could see what a lieutenant would be doing. And I was fascinated by that. And here's what I learned. I was inspired so much by what I saw. Here's the two or three things that I learned. And I knew from that experience that I wanted to be an Army officer.
That's fantastic. I mean, that's what you're talking about, Lee, is this bridge, is the bridge, no matter. So the point is, I think that both Lee and I are making here is that no matter what question they ask you, they could ask you, is the sky blue? And you could answer that question and then bridge over to your talking point. And you see this with people all the time in the news. You see the news person ask the politician a question, and the person doesn't even answer that question or answers it very briefly, then bridges to the talking point.
Exactly. Yep. They go to their stump speech, right? They're 3 to 5 key talking points. Now, one other thing that, and it really depends on the interviewer, sometimes at the end of an interview, an interviewer may say, oh, is there anything else that you'd like to ask or add? And then, you know, you should have that hip pocket key talking point ready to go. Something to close the interview up with that just kind of reinforces, you know, why you're there, why you're excited about potentially becoming an Army officer, and close that up. So, you want your opening, tell me about yourself speech, and you want your closing, you know, just here it is. Here's the exclamation point on the whole interview. And if they don't say, is there anything else, before they end it, sometimes, you know, there's a verbal or a nonverbal sign that the interview is ending. And I encourage people to interject and just say, well, I want to thank you all very much for this opportunity. And then, boom, hit them with your closing talking point.
Yeah, exactly. So again, getting in, you know, your key points that you worked on somewhere in the interview. And, you know, you can really, I think the best case scenario, in my opinion, would be where the interviewer just sits back and listens to you while you're controlling the interview. That is kind of the best, I think that's the best case scenario, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's another, I think, really key point about these interviews is have something to say. If they ask you, tell me a leadership experience that you had that was a challenge. You know, they don't want to hear, well, I was told to put together, oh, I don't know, games for our senior dance or senior carnival, and just leave it at that. You know, yeah, my task was to put together games for our senior carnival. So here's the things that I did. And list them off. And it's not just the tasks that they want to hear. Actually, they probably don't care about the tasks, but that's your bridge to get to, oh, so I brought together, I assigned leads for each of the games. Then we brainstormed. I led the brainstorming session about what order these games should be in, and delegated to each of the leads, you know, how they're supposed to set things up. And then I developed a timeline where these games were going to be put together. And then I went and assessed what they did. And at the end, the carnival, or these games, went extremely well. And we made, you know, 100% more than they made the previous year. It's giving examples. The last thing you want in an interview is for the interview to keep asking you a question about that. And I've had this so many times where, okay, well, tell me what you did in this leadership challenge. Well, I put together the games for the carnival. Okay, so talk to me about that. Tell me more about that. Well, you know, we decided it would be 5 games. Okay, and then as the leader, what did you do? You don't want that. You want the interviewer to give you a question and run with it. But understand, you know, you don't want to go too long-winded, but you want to make sure that you're showcasing yourself. This is clearly a question aimed at leadership. So bing, you know, a light comes on. I've got to explain what I did to showcase leadership here. I've got to demonstrate to the interviewer that I have experience leading. I have a general knowledge. You know, these interviewers are not expecting these high school students to be experts in any of these areas, but to show potential. And as you can show the potential by giving examples, 2 to 3 examples for each question that they ask you is fine. If you go over 3, then you're going a little too much. But less than 2, yeah, it's you know, okay. Well, I want to see more. I want to hear more. And you don't want to have the interviewer have to prompt you to talk a little bit more.
Right. Yeah. I could tell you with the interviews that I've done, I the interviews that I enjoy is the one where I'm just sitting back and listening because I don't want to work as an interviewer. I want to just sit back and the last thing I want to do is be peppering the person with questions because that's just tedious on me. I would prefer just to ask a question, sit back. And my favorite interviews are the ones where I'm hardly saying anything. I'm just the interviewer is just doing everything. You mentioned earlier, Lee, and I just wanted to remember this before we, of course, moved on to other things, was this kind of closing piece to this. And I thought what was great about that point is that a winning question always at the end of these interviews is, and this is a stock question, would be, you know, what can I do between now and when I come onto campus in the fall for ROTC to better prepare myself to be a cadet? So what that shows, one, is that, you know, you're committed to ROTC. Two, is that you want to improve. And three, is that you want to be the best cadet possible or midshipman possible. So it's one of those things that you want to, that final question, I think, is an important one to kind of close and show your enthusiasm about ROTC.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always good to have at least 1 or 2 questions at the end. It, again, that just demonstrates the fact that you're forward thinking and that you have done your research. And I've worked with, I think just about every one of the students that I've worked with so far in prepping for their ROTC interviews on developing some of these questions. And I think it makes a difference. I know when I was on the other side, when I was the interviewer, I loved when they came up with good questions. But it has to be a relevant question. It can't just be, oh, I'm supposed to ask a question, so I'm going to ask a question, because they'll see through that. Ask something smart and intelligent, something you really want to know the answer to.
Right. I would kind of avoid asking the question, you know, of the interviewer, well, what's your background and things like that? Yeah. I know that's sometimes used, but, you know, other questions, for example, that may frame things would be, you know, talk to me about the summer camp for the Air Force ROTC and how and what that's involved, because I heard that's very important towards accessions in the Air Force. Or take the Army example. You can say, I heard the Army is moving to a new physical fitness test. Is ROTC doing that or what? And so it's kind of one of those things where you show the interviewer one more time that you're tuned into what's going on with ROTC and the Army and you want to learn more. So good. So so let's talk about dressing for the interview. What do you think? Tuxedo?
Tuxedos with flip-flops, yeah. you know, like in any job interview, you dress for success. What's the old adage? Don't dress for the job you have, dress for the job that you want. Well, you know, and jokingly, you know, I say to them, I don't want you going out to the Army-Navy store and buying a uniform and walking in with that. But no, they expect you, look, you're trying to be an Army officer or Air Force or whatever branch. They want to see when you walk in the door, okay? They want to see somebody that looks professional. They don't expect you to come in there in a 3-piece suit. But dress in slacks, a nice shirt, a sport jacket, or a blazer. I mean, you can go with or without a tie, but you need to look clean and look professional. Your shoes should be cleaned and shined. Don't have wacky socks on. You know, I don't care if you think you have the best sock game in the world. Go in there with conservative socks.
Right, yeah.
and if you do wear a tie, it should be something conservative. Either a solid color or something that, you know, a pattern that's easy to the eyes. You don't want it to be distracting or cry out, hey, you know, I got this great personality. If you do have a great personality, let them see that in the interview, but not in your tie.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So, well, we're obviously talking about men here. So, so we'll get to the women here in a second. But, you know, I think probably dressing too formal, I don't recommend that the candidates dress too formal, but I do agree with you on all those points. You know, one of the things that I learned later in life is that your socks are supposed to match your pants and your belt is supposed to match your shoes, which is interesting. So, so things like that, you know, looking sharp. I advise candidates not to wear a tie, but wear definitely like a you know, kind of business casual. I would kind of say the best way to describe that. Now, with women, any advice for women in regards to these interviews?
It would kind of be the same in a way. Just dress professionally. And see what you think. I'm not opposed to slacks over a skirt. It doesn't matter, but it should be professional. You know, not something that they're going to go to a formal event in, but you know, what we call business casual, at least.
Yeah, I think that's the key, is the business casual look that shows you're dressed well, but yet, you know, not too buttoned up formal. Because remember, the military service is, you know, one where you're getting your hands dirty, you're out there doing things. You know, if you're looking too dressed, in my opinion, it might bring up the question to me, well, you know, is this person afraid to get dirt under their fingernails or something like that? So
being well groomed as well. So for the guys, you know, if they shave, make sure you shave that morning and have a decent haircut. Nobody's expecting to come in with a military style haircut, but look well groomed, I think, is the key. And I would suggest don't go in with earrings on if you're a guy. And if you're a woman, I would really talk to them about, again, dress for the job that you want. So go in maybe with your hair up and back the way a woman would who's in a dress uniform, and minimize the amount of jewelry that you're wearing.
And perfumes yeah. and colognes.
Perfumes and colognes. Like that. Yeah. Avoid those, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. So on time, early, how early?
Well, you know, the old adage in the military is if you're not 15 minutes early, you're late. So that's usually what I stick to. That's my personal general rule, and that's what I share with others. I wouldn't be too much earlier than 15 minutes, but I would say the window would be 15 to 5 minutes before the interview. I always really prefer closer to 15 to the actual office where you're going to be. If I'm going, you know, I suggest to these the people going in for these interviews, get to that campus at least 30 minutes before you need to be there, at least in your planning, because you never know if you're going to run into traffic, if there's a car accident or something like that. So get there 30 minutes early, but don't show up until, you know, about 15 minutes before the interview.
Yeah, that's great advice. And, you know, if you're going, you know, if you take the advice from this podcast, you will have visited the ROTC program that you're going to be interviewing ahead of time. So Air Force, it remember, is the closest one to where you live, is going to interview you. The Army ROTC, you can select any ROTC program you want to interview at. The Navy will tell you where to interview, but it'll be most likely be at your closest Navy ROTC unit. So if you imagine visiting ahead of time, you already know where it's at. You've already met everybody there, and you're a lot more comfortable if you go in, if you've actually been there ahead of time. Now, parents, if someone shows up with their parents, what kind of impression does that make on you there, Colonel Reynolds?
I suggest that they don't. And that's just because you want to go in and at every opportunity, you want to present yourself as a strong, independent person. Having your parents there may make it seem a little bit more like, you know, mom and dad are hovering too much, or maybe you're here for mom and dad and you're not there for you. It's very subtle, but it could come over, you know, wrong. And sometimes, and not meaning to do so, the parents could be very inquisitive and they could actually, you know, sometimes it just doesn't look good. It's the parent I have seen gets a little too involved, and it's like, okay, hey, I really need to get this started because I've got somebody else after them. And that's not the time for the parent to come in asking questions. That's the time for the interviewer to ask the questions. and you don't want to distract from that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the candidate coming in on their own, standing on their own 2 feet, making the statement that I am here because I want to be a Navy officer, not because my mom or dad want me to be a Navy officer. Now, for those parents out there that are listening, I don't think there's any problem with after the interview's over, going in and asking some questions after everything's said and done. But again, I think in the beginning of this thing, when the person first comes in to do the interview, I think maybe, you know, mom and dad, if you're driving your child to the interview, maybe hang out in the car until after they text you after the interview's over with.
Go to a cafe on campus or something. Yeah. But Rob, I meant to say this before, just getting back to if these students are going to visit the ROTC unit in advance of them doing the interview. Remember that first impressions are lasting. So don't go in cutoffs and you know, look professional. You know, I'm not expecting you to show up there to meet them, but in a jacket and tie like you might for the interview. But go there, look and act professionally when you're there, because they will remember that.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. You definitely want to make that good first impression. So that's a great, great point, Lee. I'm glad you brought that up. So we've worked with a number of candidates. What are some of the pitfalls you see with some of these candidates?
Candidates who are distracted because they didn't turn their cell phone off. and that's a big one. Or looking away. Candidates who don't look the interviewer in the eyes, but are constantly looking down or up or out the window. You've got to have that eye-to-eye contact. That's one of these nonverbal cues that the interviewer is looking for that projects confidence. So if you're constantly looking away or distracted, that's saying, one, that you're not confident, that maybe you don't really want to be there. So that's a negative. Also being, we want you to be confident, but I don't want you to be overconfident or cocky. You know, that's because that comes across wrong too. But probably the biggest one, and what we talked about being late, but I think the biggest one is the biggest pitfall is just people not preparing, just not knowing. We talked about some of these in earlier on in the conversation here, just not doing their homework and not being able to speak effectively about themselves and their experience or about what they want to do. It's like they showed up as a lark. And that's a huge pitfall.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is it, Lee? I know that there's always that certain percentage of people that we've worked with who seemingly are cocky. We call it kind of, you know, people who seem to know it all. Why are both you and I who kind of do these interviews so not necessarily repulsed by it, but why is that such a negative, you think, in some of these, in these interviews?
Right. Because you don't know if you can teach them anything. Cocky people come across, you know, overconfident where, well, here I am, I'm God's gift to the military. I know we have to do this for administrative purposes, but just give me the scholarship. I know I'm going to get it. Well, so what does that say to me as an interviewer, as a military officer is, well, I don't know if this guy's going to do well as an Army officer. You know, we want officers to learn, to be able to, you have to have strong communication skills, but intercommunication. You know, if you're gonna turn people off, you're not gonna be working well with others. Teamwork in the military is everything. You're telling me one, you can't. Yeah, I don't know if we can teach you because you think you know everything. And two, I don't know if you'll get along well with people. You may rub people the wrong way. And we want people who are open to new ideas and open to diversity and to other people. And so that's why it's a real big turnoff.
Yeah. And it's like when somebody acts that way, you're going like, you haven't seen anything yet. Why are you so, you know, I mean, it's like, you're just kind of like going, you're just shaking your head and you're going, geez, you know, let's see.
And I've had a few of those just in my prep sessions, but I felt good that by a third prep session that, you know, I was able to make these young students understand that key point is that, you know, be confident, but not overconfident and not cocky. And through leading them and guiding them through the questions and answers and asking them more about themselves and their experience and understanding the people you're going to talk to and why, like this conversation we just had, that how that comes across and why it's a bad thing. I've been able to see somebody go from cockiness in the first interview to, wow, really nailing it by their third prep session.
Right. Absolutely. So as we kind of go into another question here, when you talk about kind of mental preparation, mentally preparing for this interview, what are some of the things that you've that's been effective for you as far as mental preparation goes for interviews?
Well, first and foremost, as we've talked about throughout this interview, is preparation. You know, the more you know, one, about yourself, you've got to know your strengths and your weaknesses. You've got to develop your key talking points. Understand what the questions are, war game them, practice this. I think we've talked, you've got to have mock interviews. You've got to practice the interview. And not just with yourself. You got to sit there with somebody else who knows what they're talking about, and you've got to rehearse this. So preparation, I think, is probably the most important thing that's going to help you mentally prepare for these. But having confidence in yourself, I think, is a big one as well. And picturing yourself in the position, picturing yourself already as a cadet. You know, when I've worked a lot in the entertainment industry, and I've in different areas, but also as an actor. And so I've done a lot of auditions. And one of the key things about auditioning is don't go in there thinking it's an audition. Go into the audition, which is an audition is really an interview for an actor. Go in there thinking you've already got the role and now I'm performing that role. And once I learned that and really internalized that, it made for me auditioning and then for any other interviews I did after that for other jobs, I went in there with that mindset. That you know, I've got this. Now I'm just, this is just part of the job. It actually put my mind at ease. I was less stressed about it.
Wow, that's right. The preparation and then you know, and preparation. So that's really what we're talking about, and kind of yeah, feeling that. So I mean, you know, and it kind of goes back to something we talked about earlier, in kind of building your confidence would be no matter what question they ask you, whether it's a curveball. A question you're not prepared for is going back to your talking points.
Yeah, developing good talking points, and that's going to be your saving grace for the entire interview. But especially if you get unexpected questions or curveballs, you know, as a public affairs officer who's preparing a general or even myself to go in front of the news media, you know, we call it the murder board. But we say, okay, what are the five, you know, best questions that we could be asked? So we war game, what are the five good questions? And we come up with answers to those or talking points. And then what are the five worst questions we can anticipate being asked? I mean, really, the five worst, or when I say worst, I mean toughest questions. And then we decide what are those questions, and then we create answers to those. And that's kind of what I help these students do. You know, what are the five easy ones? You know, the questions that we know maybe that are coming, but based on that individual, because this has to be tailored to the individual. So when I prep somebody, I'm talking to them a lot. I'm getting them at ease. I'm getting them to let their guard down so I can see who they really are. Go through an honest evaluation of their strengths and weaknesses. So their strengths, those are easy to create talking points for. Their weaknesses, because the interviewer is going to hone in on those. He's going to see their resume or their transcript, and they're going to know what their strengths and weaknesses are, or just through the questions. So they're going to direct questions at them. Like I talked about, I think at the start of this interview, hey, you know, this person is weak in scholastics. Well, you know, when I've got other people who are strong in scholastics, athletics, and leadership, and you're only strong in two, why should I give you a scholarship? You want to have that answer ready to go.
Yeah. You want to have it. I think the key thing you said is you want to have it ready to go, but what should you bring it up if it's not, if they don't ask that question?
If it's a negative, no. Don't, yeah, you don't highlight the negatives, but you are prepared to respond to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And bridge to a positive. You turn a negative into a positive, right? Yeah. Again, the old adage, no news is bad news.
Yeah. Yeah, the bridge is just so important in this thing. And I think the master of that, I thought of all time, was our former Vice President Dick Cheney, who I would listen to him in interviews. And the interviewer would, of course, be antagonistic towards him, maybe because they're, you know, more liberal or, you know, is or are not very inclined towards the former vice president. And then they'd ask a question, and then the vice president would say something very brief about it, then transition. I mean, right away. And then after that question was over with, I'd say to myself, he never answered the question, you know, and but it seems fine. So, you know, your interviewer and that's kind of one of these things of taking control of the interview, is that if you get to that point where, you know that no matter what they're going to ask you, you're ready for something. Imagine the confidence you go into in the interview that way.
Absolutely. And you know, of course, honesty is the best thing. They'll have all your records. They'll know if you are weak on academics. So you don't, obviously you don't lie about it, but own up to it. Because I think that's something that they like to see. Oh, yes, sir. I have struggled in the past on academics. No doubt about that. I wish I would have focused on that a little bit more sooner. But here's what I've done to make changes, especially this year. I'm very proud of myself because, you know, I've taken on extra classes. I did summer school last year. My grades this year have improved dramatically. I'm up from a B to a B plus or an A minus. So you're taking that negative, you're owning up to it, and you're telling them what you've done. So, you know, if I was the interviewer, I would respect that so much more instead of somebody just saying, well, yeah, you know, hey, I'm good in athletics and I'm good in leadership. Address the elephant in the room and say how you're improving. Again, this should all be done in your preparation and, you know, demonstrate to them that you know how to take accountability for yourself and that you know how to improve yourself when you need to.
Yeah, absolutely. So good. I think we're about ready to wrap this up here. I know that, you know, you and I before the podcast talked about how we could go on for about 2 or 3 hours on this topic, you know, because of all that we've seen, you know, over our time that we've been in ROTC and the number of candidates we've seen kind of go through this process. It's, you know, you learn a lot and you see a lot. I would say just asking you the last question, Lee, what do you think, again, is the most important point or the most important takeaway from the interview that bears repeating?
Well, said it many times, preparation and practice. Do your homework and practice the interview. I think those are the most important things. And as part of your preparation, it's gathering all the information. It's understanding who you are. It's understanding your audience, who you're going to be talking to, and practicing that. Focus your answers on what they need to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would add, I mean, certainly that would be my number one thing too. I would say the one thing that I would say to do is learn as much about the service that you're going into as you possibly can before the interview takes place, and demonstrate that in the interview to your interviewer. So, and what your goal is to demonstrate to the interviewer that you have done your due diligence, that you have done your homework, and that you want to be an Army officer, an Air Force officer, a Navy officer. It's analogous to going to do an interview with Amazon. Let's just say, for example, if you're going into a certain area of Amazon, if you had researched ahead of time that particular area and know the strengths and weaknesses, that will impress your interviewer. So make sure you do the proper preparation so that you know about the service that you're going to be applying to.
Rob, everything that we've said here, the skills at least, the prep and the practice applies to interviews at anywhere. But of course, you know, we focus a little bit more on the audience, which is these students are applying to be military officers. So they need to keep that in mind when they're preparing.
Yeah. Well, that's great, Lee. Well, thanks for coming today to the ROTC Scholarship Podcast. It's great to have you on board. And, you know, we'll of course be continuing to, you know, prep people for interviews into the future, but we're looking forward to that in the coming years. And, you know, thanks again.
Well, thanks, Rob. I appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, my hat's off to all of those in the audience there that are considering applying. You know, as somebody that retired after 30 years as an officer in the Army and 3 years enlisted, it's a great way of life. And I encourage people to pursue it.
Yep. Thanks, Lee. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to the ROTC Scholarship Podcast. If you like what we're doing, please leave a quick review. If you have any questions or want more information about ROTC or our consulting services, please visit our website at rotcconsulting.com. Take care, and we'll see you next time.